Finding the right place to bury his father's ashes, as it turned out, was to be the only part of renowned sociologist and author Alan Johnson's quest. The next and considerably more challenging task was finding his own place to call home and a people to whom he belonged. He writes about this in his new memoir, Not From Here. The book is published by Temple University Press, and it's a pleasure to welcome Alan Johnson to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Give us a sense of how many of these answers did you find before writing the book, or were you writing the book as a way to find some of the answers?
I would say I was writing it to try to find the answers, and don't have them. This has not been the kind of journey that ends with an epiphany in which everything gets set right. It has, I think, if anything, it's been a journey of learning to live with questions to which there aren't any easy answers, which I think is a challenge that I face as a result of having taken this trip. But I also think we face it as a nation collectively.
You say that this was really born from the moment that your father said to you, it doesn't matter, that it ultimately makes no difference at all where his ashes should be scattered after his death. How was it born at that moment?
Well, I think because it put me in a position that would eventually compel me to act. When I first asked him several years before he died what he wanted me to do with his ashes, he just said, I don't care, it makes no difference. It didn't strike me as that peculiar, because he had lived all over the world, he was fluent in multiple languages, and so it just didn't seem not to fit to me. But as years went by, and I still had his ashes in this little box in my house, I felt compelled to do something with them, something meaningful, which then made me immediately aware that I had no idea what to do with them. I did not know what place would be the place where he would belong. And then I realized that I had no idea where I belonged. I didn't know what I would say to my children about what to do with me after I died. And so finally, I went to the Midwest to, retrace part of his life and my ancestors' lives on his side of the family. I started in South Dakota, where he went to high school, and worked my way back to Minnesota, where he was born, and then wound up in Iowa, where his father was born and where his grandparents had emigrated from Norway to settle and become farmers. And it was through that almost 2,000-mile trip that I realized, as it progressed, that I was looking for something, as much for myself as for my father, some piece of land that would somehow communicate to me that this was where we both belonged.
You use the word satisfying in the book when it comes to your mother's ash scattering request. This was made more than a decade prior to your father's passing. What was satisfying about that request?
I think, Joe, what was satisfying was that it was there. It was guidance. She did not put me in the position of having to answer the question of where does she belong. She just told us what she wanted us to do with her ashes, and so it simply didn't occur to me. If my father had not responded as he did, I doubt that I ever would have seriously engaged with the question of where do I belong? Do I belong anywhere? Do I have any people who belong to a particular place? If he had just said, "Well, put my ashes, here," I would have just done that, and I suspect that would have been the end of it. And I, like my experience, most of the people in this country, I would have just gone on without ever seriously asking myself those kinds of questions.
When it comes to you, did you ever consider and think, well, I will be with my mother?
No, because once I started to ask the question of where do I belong, I don't know where she belonged either. I think that she never asked herself that question, as far as I can tell. And by belonging, I don't mean belonging in any sense. I mean, there are lots of ways in which I've experienced myself as belonging to my marriage, my family, and so on. But this kind of belonging that I only discovered by taking this trip was a belonging that is rooted in being included in a particular group of people, a lineage, an ethnicity, which is itself identified in terms of its relation to place. And my mother, who was born in Wisconsin, but Wisconsin is not where her people are from, her people in that larger sense, in the same way that the upper Midwest is not where my father's people are from. My great-grandparents were Norwegians. They were from Norway and deeply identified with that place. But there is no such place for me. I'm not Norwegian. There is no American people. American is not an ethnicity. So there is no people that I belong to who in turn are identified with a particular place, a particular piece of land, such that when they look at that land, they see themselves reflected back. And when they look at themselves or one another, part of what they see is the land itself that they identify with. I think that's an experience that is almost completely lacking in North America, unless you are Native American.
You connect the land that your relatives farmed in Wisconsin with slavery, with the expulsion of Native people before that. So how do those links inform that connection to your ancestors? And is there a risk of reading too much into something, into the history?
Well, of course, there are a couple of questions there.
Yes.
The first one, I think, is that it complicates my relation to my ancestors in several ways. The first is that, of course, they are, as am I, they were living out their lives as part of a larger national story that involves some pretty horrible things, including genocide and ethnic cleansing. And they, whether they were conscious of it or not, or actively participating in it, they were part of it because they were part of the expansion of this country. So that my desire to feel good about my ancestors, for example, and to identify myself with them, so that if I see them as somehow untarnished, untainted, then I can also feel that way myself, that becomes greatly complicated. When I, especially on this trip, when I'm going across land that I, as a sociologist, I know that some of the history of this land and I know some of the stories that it contains, what was done to Native people so that my great-grandparents could then just come in a wagon from Chicago and buy some land without any sense that they were doing something wrong.
Right.
So it complicates my relationship with them. I also think that it gives me a sense of obligation to them, which I only discovered actually after I got home, as I continued to digest what happened to me out there. I feel a sense that as the latest in line, and as a citizen of this country, I have an obligation to them to try to find out what it would mean to set things right. In relation to Native Americans, but also in relation to African Americans, how are we going to make it right? And I don't know what those words actually mean right now, but as an American, I feel an obligation to be part of the national commitment, which we at this point do not have, to finding out what that's going to mean. What will it mean for us to make right the things that our ancestors participated in that were terrible?
Is that why your quest to find your father's final resting place, it brought you to Iowa, it brought you to Minnesota, it brought you to South Dakota, yet as you mentioned, his family was from Norway. It never brought you there.
No. And the reason it didn't, there were two reasons why I didn't take him to Norway. That's your question, right?
Yes.
Why didn't I take him to Norway?
Yes.
The first was that he didn't ask me to. If he had said that, I would have done, that would have been the end of the conversation, and I would have done it in a heartbeat. But he didn't ask for that, which in some ways was a little surprising because he, when I asked him at one point when he was quite elderly if he thought of himself as a Norwegian, and he said without hesitating, "Oh, absolutely." And I said, "Tell me something about that." And he went on and on about all things wonderful about Norway. But then I asked him, but then he was very quick to add, but I'm also an American. And it was as if he was trying to reassure me of his patriotism or whatever. And so I said, so all right, when you say you're an American, does it mean the same thing to you as when you say you're Norwegian? And he said, oh no, there was no question about that. Norway was where his heart was. But he didn't ask for that. He just said, it makes no difference to me. So my first impulse then was not to take him, go to all the effort, frankly, to take him to Norway, since it didn't matter to him. But then as I started thinking about where do I belong as an American who doesn't have that connection to some place, I realized that I had a longing for some place on this planet where both my father and I would belong. Because in some ways it made no sense to me, Joe, that a father could belong someplace where his children did not.
Right.
Because that seems to go against any idea of descendant and ancestry, of lineage. And yet I realized that this whole country is based on the fact that we're all from somewhere else, so that if you trace anyone's lineage back enough generations, you will reach a point where there is this dramatic disconnect, whereby everyone from that point back is from someplace, is indigenous to someplace, and everyone from that point forward is not. And that seems to me to be a very peculiar and almost unique situation in the world. Australia might also share that same condition. And so that I then realized I wanted to find if there was such a place where both the father and the son might belong.
Alan Johnson is the author of the memoir Not From Here. It is published by Temple University Press. That idea of not from here, of what you just described, can go much deeper. It can go not only sociological, but psychological as well, as to an overall feeling that many of us have, which is we don't fit in and we don't belong.
Yes. I think that what I have experienced through this and what I was confronting appears in lots of different ways in our society, in us as individual people. One of them, I think, is a tremendous amount of loneliness. As I experience the culture that I'm living in, I think there is a great deal of disconnection, isolation, loneliness, an intense focus on the individual as somehow the sum total of what we are. The logos we wear on our clothing, who we vote for, what region we're from, all of these very intense focuses on the individual identity as the sum total of who we are. And that, in addition to what I have seen around us now, but it seems to me to be part of the entire history of this country, which is this continuing struggle over who owns America. Groups of people saying this country is being taken away from us and we're going to take it back. And this tug of war about what is America? Is it Christian? Is it not Christian? Is it white? Is it? And who owns it? And my sense is that such struggles on a collective level, but at the same time, the struggles that go on for us as individuals come out of this sense, going back generations, that none of us belongs here. Who isn't Native American? And so then that is, of course, a deeply disturbing thing to consider. And so then there are all these ways in which we try to not look at that, to not feel that isolation and dislocation, the fact that we are all displaced people, even if generations removed. And when I was driving out, especially in South Dakota, where it is so flat, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of miles, driving in silence, and I discovered, that was how I discovered what I was looking for, by having to go into this extraordinary silence and solitude. And what I'm aware of, Joe, is that in this society, we are surrounded by noise, by distraction, by a frantic pace of life, go, go, go. And that by having to respond to my father's ashes and his lack of guidance, I was then put in this position of being in this solitude and this stillness for days and days. And it was only then that I was able to start noticing land in a different way than I ever had before, realizing that land holds stories, and that my personal story and that the personal stories of my ancestors are bound up in those larger stories.
You mentioned earlier trying to find a place where a father and son have that commonality. And that struck me. And in reading the book, I thought, I'm 47 years old, and this year my wife and I planned and picked out our burial plot. We noted that it was where her parents would be buried. It was where my parents are buried, and my wife's grandparents are buried. It all made sense.
Yes.
And what surprised me is that in my exuberance of finding a place to be buried, that it brings up a larger issue to me that your book addresses as well. Is that we're just not comfortable with death. I mean, mentioning that, you want to talk about something that goes over like a lead balloon to a group of people that, oh, I picked out where I feel I belong. Well, not even that is really accepted.
Yes.
Which, of course, makes you feel like you don't belong.
Yes. I mean, my sense is that we are lost in a peculiar way in this country. That each generation comes in unattached, unanchored, lost. And that the consequences of that play out in lots of different ways, and I think our death-phobic culture is one of them. And that one of the consequences is also that we don't know who we are. And I think not knowing who we are, who we're from, where we're from, produces a tremendous amount of anxiety. And that it can get manifested and then responded to in all kinds of different ways. And our death phobia may be one of them. There's a sense of restlessness in this country, as if we're having to always be on the move. And again, this goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. It's the whole history of Europeans in North America. This sense of restlessness. And death is to acknowledge the reality of death, but the essential nature of death, that we have to die, that life depends on death of all kinds. There would be no life without death. That requires a certain rootedness that the restlessness doesn't allow.
We're speaking with Alan Johnson, author of the new book, Not From Here, a memoir published by Temple University Press. Do you feel that we would be more authentic if we followed the rituals and practices of the native peoples who were here on this land that we inhabit before us?
My most important response to your question, Joe, is I don't know, because it hasn't been done on a wide scale. I don't know to what degree it's possible for us who do not belong to this land to engage in the rituals that are part of the lives of the people who do. I think that we're in a very unusual situation in this country, everyone who's not Native American, not only the United States, North America, basically. And I don't know, if I'm hearing your question correctly, I don't know what the answer to this is. It may be that by engaging with those rituals, we will become more aware of what's been lost.
Mm.
And at this point in my life and at this point in this journey that of course didn't end for me when I got off the plane, I'm trying to find a way for the rest of my life to live authentically with the reality of what's been lost. And it's huge. What has been lost across generations in this country. And I don't think you just go become indigenous. I think that's a contradiction in terms. To achieve some kind of indigenousness. So the question for me, and I think for us as a nation, is, so given the reality of how this nation was formed and how it has gone historically and how it is in the present, given the reality of that, what's our response? What comes next for us? And we all might throw up our hands and say, well, but of course, we don't know. No one's ever been here before in this kind of situation. And I think it's akin to the example I like to use. It's as if I had an accident, a car accident, and I lost my sight. It'd be a terrible loss. And if the doctor said, there's no way in the world you're ever going to see again, then at that moment, if I'm going to save myself, if you will, as people have done who've had this experience, I'm going to have to find a way to wake up every morning knowing I'm not going to see anything when I open my eyes. But I still have a life. And so I think for anyone who goes through tremendous loss like that, or losing a loved one or a life partner, then the question is, so who am I now?
Right.
And I think as a nation, and for me as an individual, that's the guiding question that comes out of this journey. Who are we now, if we are willing to embrace the reality of what has been and continues into the present? Who are we now? And how are we going to live?
So, Alan, let me ask you this question as my closing question, which perhaps is the most difficult. And that is that with this, the sense of loss and not belonging and still questioning, is it linked to happiness? Are you happy?
I think happiness is highly overrated. I have moments of happiness, which is how I think happiness happens. My understanding is that when Thomas Jefferson wrote Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness, the original draft had property, not happiness. And I think it's interesting that, as the story goes, he changed it to happiness.
What about joy or great meaning?
I think actually all of that becomes more is enhanced by living in reality. That's how I would respond to that. Denial is a bad life strategy. And denial is a way of life in this country. Someone once said, I can't remember who it was, he said, referred to the 51st state in the United States, which is the state of denial. And we have lived with such massive denial about those aspects of the whole story of this country that make us want to turn away because they're so terrible. And I can't see that denial has done us any good at all. So my response to that would be that to the degree that I live with the entirety of my story and our story, including the loss that that entails, everything about my life is more real. So my days of sadness, and I have days of sadness about everything that we're talking about right now, but my joy is far more real for being grounded in the reality of the whole story of my existence and our lives than it ever was when I was participating in our massive denial.
If you are living in reality, it then becomes possible to die in that reality as well.
Oh, yes. I mean, I had a conversation with my son a few days ago, who's in his 40s. He's read the memoir, of course, and he said, "So, Dad, where do you want to be buried?" And that was, for me, Joe, that was perfect. That's one of the things that I want to have come out of this experience, is for my children to say, all right, I've read the story now, so how are we going to deal with this question? And that's not going to just be, well, bury me here. This is a larger conversation. I think this is going to be one of the most important conversations I ever had with my children. Because it's not simply a practical matter of where to bury Dad or Dad's ashes. It's about who are we? Where do we belong? And I want to have that conversation with them. And I don't see that as being a bad outcome of this journey at all. Because I think that part of what's going to... The reason I think that, Joe, is because I don't know what's going to come out of that conversation. But I do believe it's going to be real, and that it's going to touch on things about our attachment to one another, not just within my family, to my children, but to us as a nation. I think there is the possibility that if we have the courage to really engage with these questions, it's not just going to be some kind of misery. I don't believe that for a minute. I think we are going to find out who we are in a way that we haven't known before, and that our potential as human beings is on the other side of that door.
Alan Johnson is the author of the memoir, Not From Here. The book is published by Temple University Press. Alan, a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much for sharing and for your great insight. I appreciate it.
And with you, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the book, Not From Here, a memoir by Alan Johnson. The book is published by Temple University Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.